May it please the court. My name is Marshall Edelman. I'm the attorney for the employee in this case, who's the appellant, Mr. Douglas Cosby. This is a workers' compensation case. The issue before this court today, and frankly, the only reason why we're here, is whether or not we can harmonize this statute, which I've provided to you, the words in the statute, 2 and 3. And if we can't harmonize them, are the words so poorly written that it violates the Constitution? I want to talk first about the statutory construction, because if we construe it in a certain manner, there's no need to go to Part 2, to constitutionality. Mr. Cosby, in this case, has given you the only way to interpret these provisions without finding it unconstitutional in this case. We are really only talking about, it is poorly written, frankly, and it's confusing, but there's really only three phrases we need to know in order to harmonize this case and this statute. The three phrases are, number one, and I start from the top of in two, and for the purposes of this, subsection two, I'll say as two, and then subsection three, I'll just say 3-1 and 3-2 to make things easier. The first one is previous disability. That is in 2, and that is the only place where it is. The second one is the word injuries, plural, more than one, which we take to mean all injuries. Number 3 is the phrase, subsequent compensable injury, singular, only one. Those, if you know what those three things mean, then we're able to decipher this statute. We know what previous disability means, because the case law tells us in Webling. All of Mr. Cosby's previous disabilities occurred before SB 1, and SB 1 is what amended this statute. Prior to the amendment, all we had was 2, without the bolded and underline. And we had that for the history of the Second Injury Fund, essentially, in pertinent part. So we know what previous disabilities are, and Mr. Cosby's previous disabilities are all before 2014, because they are 1974, 2004, 2008, and 2002. So he falls within 2. Second, we understand and we know what a subsequent compensable injury is, and the legislature understood what a subsequent compensable injury is because they use them differently in the statute. And this court told us in the Witte case that they explained the difference, that the fund is responsible for permanent partial disability benefits if you prove at least one pre-existing disability and you have to prove one subsequent compensable injury. Well, the subsequent compensable injury is Mr. Cosby's January 22, 2014 injury when he fell off a ladder. He was a carpenter. So that's a subsequent compensable injury. There's one. That leaves us with the third phrase, injuries. That's the new phrase, the new word. We take it to mean all injuries. So, and that comes into play in 2 and 3. But in 2, it defines previous disability. In 3, it just says injuries. And I'm referring to 3-1.
In 3-1. Are you reading 2 and the word injuries plural? The fact that it's plural to say it has to apply to the prior injuries, the pre-existing?
Yes, Your Honor.
It has the word cases that is plural also. So since cases is plural, it could be referring to a single injury in multiple cases as opposed to that a case has to have multiple injuries.
I don't agree with that interpretation, Your Honor, because all cases of permanent disability, that's been already interpreted. And what that's saying is subsection 2 applies to, by permanent disability, they mean permanent partial disability and permanent total disability. Since in workers' comp, there's two types of cases. There's people who can go back to work who have pre-existing injuries, and there's people who can't go back to work, and those are PPD. It's what we call them, PPD and PTD. So that's what they mean. For all cases of permanent disability, which means PPD and PTD, where there has been previous disability. So it's talking about those two genres of cases.
When it says previous disability, it's not saying previous injuries, it's saying previous disability. So is it referring to there's already been determination of disability? So they're talking about where you've had a prior determination of disability for injuries occurring prior to January 1, 2014?
I don't think that's what it means. I think it just means all previous disabilities, whether or not there was a determination by the court or not for it. And that's how...
Why didn't it say previous injuries as opposed to disabilities?
Why didn't it say previous injuries?
Yeah, tell me the distinction and what meaning...
Because if it just said injuries, we don't know if they became... where in time that they fall, whether or not they came before or after. So it has to say before.
Well, if it says previous injuries, we know it would be before. But I'm just trying to figure out, you're getting into detail on the words used. And so
yes,
you're giving meaning to injuries and injury and subsequent compensable injury. And so what is meant by previous disability? How do we know? Does it have to be a prior determination, or do you later in the later suit determine you previously had one?
So the ALJ makes a determination whether or not it's a previous disability, whether or not it meets threshold to be a previous disability. Obviously, there has to be an injury in order for there to be a disability. So that's why it says that.
Okay.
Did I answer your question?
Sure, go ahead.
All right, thank you. Injuries is the new word. Subsection 3, or 3.1 and 3.2, are brand new, never before seen. Only additional language was added to 2. So we had 2 before. 3 is completely new. The legislature in 3 indicates there's a difference between injuries and subsequent compensable injury for another group of cases. So if we look at 3.1, first sentence, it says right off the bat, all claims against the Second Injury Fund for injuries occurring after January 1, 2014 stop. All injuries. That's how we take that. So all injuries have to come after 2014. Mr. Cosby's, all of his injuries don't occur after 2014. He has, like I said, previous disabilities from 74, 2004, et cetera. So he doesn't fall under 3. If we keep reading, it talks about a separate class of claims. It talks about occupational diseases, and it says... It talks about there has to be a subsequent compensable injury involving an occupational disease. So they know that there's a difference between injuries, which is all injuries, and occupational diseases. So had they wanted to exclude Mr. Cosby, it would have been simple. They could have just used one of the words they already used. They could have just said, all claims against the Second Injury Fund under 3.1, the first sentence, for all claims against the Second Injury Fund for a subsequent compensable injury, but they didn't. And so... For that reason, we are guided by their own language.
Well, your opponent argues that the more appropriate interpretation of injuries refers to primary injuries. Would you respond to that?
So, in regards to your question, Judge Russell, I think you have to look at each section first, because injuries in 2, it defines previous disability. So I take injuries in 3 to mean all injuries, both the primary, which is the subsequent compensable injury, those mean the same thing, and the previous disabilities have to occur after 2014. So in injuries in 3, that means all injuries, both previous and subsequent, because it's not defining anything. It's just on its own. All claims against the Second Injury Fund for injuries. A previous disability is... You can have an injury that doesn't amount to a disability. And so it doesn't indicate anything previous here. It just says injuries. So all we're left with is the plain meaning of the word injuries, which I take to mean all injuries, so not just the subsequent compensable. Did I answer your question?
Thank you.
All right, thank you, Judge. We don't even get to 3.2. The Second Injury Fund doesn't even address 3.1. They don't address what injuries apply where. They go straight to 3.2, and they say no claims are filed. There is only one case in the history of in all case law. Coincidentally, it was decided after our briefs was submitted at the commission. And that case interprets the exact same subsections that were amended, 2 and 3. Now, that case was a PTD, but like I said, That is the final analysis. The first step is determine what world we're in, what section are we in. And the court in Gatton, we said, we looked at 2 and 3. 2 applies to exactly like Mr. Cosby. In Gatton B, the subsequent compensable injury was in March 2014. All the pre-existing injuries in Gatton B were in 77, 2007, 2009, all before 14. And they found that Section 2 applied. Now, they didn't say it applied because he's permanently, Gatton B couldn't go back to work. They didn't say it applied because he couldn't go back to work. They said it didn't apply after they first determined where his injuries fell in the sections, and then they applied the standard, and their final determination was that he was permanently totally disabled. Now, they didn't distinguish between PPD and PTD. It just so happened he was PTD in this case. In that case, this case, we're alleging permanent partial disability, and we agree with the court in Gatton B.
Do you read these sections as conflicting?
I do think these are conflicting.
Because I see a way they all make sense, given what you said, that you determine in the later filed claim, say something was filed this year, and the person had, the court at that time, or the commission has to determine whether there was a previous disability. If there was, then it's under sub 2. All cases of permanent disability where there's been previous disability due to injuries occurring prior to January 2014 are decided under sub 2. If they look and they decide whatever occurred prior to the date of the injury that was after 2014 did not amount to a partial disability, then sub 3.2 applies. So it just depends when your currently filed claim was filed, you look and you decide, did you have a partial disability prior to 2014? If you did, sub 2 applies. If you did not, sub 3.2 applies and you can't file it. It gives meaning to all the sections.
Are you saying that's irregardless of the subsequent compensable injury since it doesn't say subsequent compensable in 2? Is that what you're saying?
It just says no claims for permanent partial disability occurring. So when did the permanent partial disability occur? If it occurred after or before 2014 is the decision, not when you filed, not if you. And that gives meaning because sub 2 applies if it occurred prior. But if it actually makes everything have some meaning.
And you found that Mr. Cosby would be, under that analysis, would that mean
That would mean he would have a right to recover. but that shouldn't be determinative of the meaning of
Well,
it.
Depending on what they decide on permanency for threshold of the pre-existing.
Exactly.
If we cannot harmonize these provisions, then the only other result is it's unconstitutional, and for the following reasons. Number one, open courts rule. For the first time in the statute, it indicates under 3.2 that you can't file. It doesn't say you're not entitled to benefits under 3.2. It says no claim for PPDs against the fund can be filed. It strips the right of a claimant to go to court to even determine if there are benefits off the bat, which is against the open courts rule. The commission, interestingly, didn't say benefits weren't awarded here. They said it can't be accepted as filed. That doesn't mean there are no benefits. To take someone away the right for a judge to actually listen to the case, I think to automatically lose without being heard is against the law. Second is due process. If these overlap, if we interpret injuries to overlap between the two, then the public won't know what section applies, and they won't have notice of if they get hurt, can they file or not.
Counselor, you're about a minute and a half over time, but I'm going to go ahead. If you'll stop, I'll go ahead and reserve your full time for rebuttal. Thank you for taking time to respond to the court's questions. You'll get your full time on rebuttal.
May it please the court.
May proceed.
This court is presented with 2 points on appeal, both of which merit your attention. I want to start by focusing on the statutory construction issue presented by the General Assembly's enactment of Senate Bill 1 before moving on to the constitutional challenges. Appellant's claim for second injury fund benefits must fail because the commission correctly held that Section 287.220.3 prohibits injured workers from receiving permanent partial disability, informally referred to as PPD, for disability occurring after January 1, 2014. The plain language of Section 287.220 as a whole supports the Commission's award. Indeed, both the strict construction of Senate Bill 1, which is required under
you
Section...
You mean their award or their order? They granted no award, correct?
Correct. There was no award granted, so the order. Excuse me, Your Honor. Both the strict construction of Senate Bill 1, which is required under Section 287.800, and the intent of the legislature is clear. Section 287.220.3 clearly and unambiguously states that, quote, no claim for permanent partial disability occurring after January 1, 2014 shall be filed against the second injury fund, end quote. According to DeLay versus Missouri Board of Probation and Parole, a statutory entitlement created by the legislature may be altered or terminated by a later enactment. That is exactly what the General Assembly has done in this case, Your Honors, by eliminating PPD claims against the second injury fund for disability occurring after the effective date, which is January 1, 2014.
So what meaning does that give to sub 2?
For sub 2, what that means is that if somebody's typically in a workers' compensation case, specifically for a second injury fund, somebody has to have a compensable work-related injury before they're entitled to benefits. Right. So what subsection 2 is telling us is that, and when it uses the phrase injuries, that is both pre-existing and primary occur before January 1, 2014, that means subsection 2 applies.
Well, it can't say previous disability due to injuries occurring prior. I mean, if it's the primary injury, it clearly occurred after.
If it's the primary, well, the injuries is referring to a previous disability. And so if somebody has a primary work-related injury that is before January 1, 2014, that doesn't change the language of it. It would still fall under subsection 2.
So is it your thought that the intention is that the legislature intended the employer to be liable for just the partial disability caused by the primary accident, and that there would be no recovery for the enhanced permanent partial disability as a result of the cumulative injuries?
Well, Your Honor, based on controlling case law, it would be under federal mutual insurance company, is that if the second injury fund is not responsible for any enhancement, then that falls back to the employer.
As you're interpreting...
So you think that the legislature intended to increase the liability for employers for work-related injuries as based on this amendment?
I wouldn't say that that's the legislature's intent, but I would say that the controlling case law indicates that if the second injury fund is not responsible, then the employer indeed is responsible.
Okay. I understand that's your conclusion, and you don't represent all those employers, so it's pretty easy for you to make that argument. So back to my question, which I'm not sure you answered, was what you thought the legislature intended. Do you think the legislature intended that they be compensated at all?
I do not think the legislature intended that they be compensated at all. Or the enhancement. I mean, somebody who has a compensable work-related injury is still being compensated for that injury, but from the second injury fund perspective, then when you look at the clear, plain language of Section 287.220.3, you have a bright line cutoff date referring to date of disability. So any disability that occurs after that date, then those individuals are not entitled to permanent partial disability benefits.
And you're interpreting the language, cases of permanent disability or claims for permanent partial disability, to be the disability that results from the primary current injury plus all the prior injuries.
That is correct, Your Honor. In a matter of consistency, the legislature has used those words that are plural, but it's clear that they're referring to, when they use the word injuries, the primary work-related injury.
And if one interprets it that way, is there any conflict in the statutes?
If one interprets it that way, then I think what we have is that subsection 3 would apply, and in looking at that, then no claim for any disability occurring after that date would be applicable in this case.
And 2 applies to any primary injury that occurs prior to January 1, 2014, which inherently includes all the previous injuries.
That is correct, Judge Breckenridge.
So what's added by the words in 2 all cases of permanent disability where there has been previous disability due to injuries occurring prior to January 1, 2014. The words where there has been previous disability really has no meaning, because you're saying we should interpret it as saying all cases of permanent disability due to injuries occurring prior to 2014 are compensable. If they occur after, they're not. The reference to previous disability is being given no meaning.
It is still given meaning, because if the pre-existing disabilities occur before January 1.
You're saying it doesn't matter if you had previous disability or not. If your injury was before, your primary injury was before 2014, you can get recovery. After 2014, you can't, regardless whether you had previous partial disability or not. So it doesn't make any difference to refer to have that language in there.
Well,
I think it all depends on when the primary injury was. That's basically the bottom line.
Yes, that is correct.
So it doesn't matter where there's been a previous disability or not under your interpretation. And yet that phrase is in there, where there has been previous disability. So it has to have some meaning.
Well, the meaning that is given by the legislature is that when they're discussing pre-existing or disability, there has to be for second injury fund claims, there has to be a primary work-related injury before somebody is entitled to benefits.
That's when you get money. Yeah, so if a primary injury occurs after 2014, you're going to have to prove previous disability in order to recover. You have to prove you have a prior injury, which just comes to the level that would qualify for you for the second injury fund. But that's in Section 3. Section 2 talks about previous existing disabilities for injuries occurring prior to 2014. You're saying those are, by definition, not compensable, whether or not there's a pre-existing injury or not.
Well, they are compensable if the primary injury occurs before the effective date.
And when you look at the entirety of Section 287.220, it relates to the second injury fund. So inherently, that explains why you would have to be looking at previous disabilities both in Subsection 2 and Subsection 3.
That is correct, Judge. Yes.
Well, to ask the question that I know it's hard to follow because these are very, very technical language, and because it's not very clear in the way it's written. But if you focus on the word occurring, I think it can give meaning to all the sections, because subsection 2 says where there's been a previous disability due to injuries occurring prior to 2014, you get compensation. Subsection 3.2 says no claims for permanent partial disability occurring after 2014 shall be filed. So if whatever happened before 2014 is determined not to have amounted to a permanent previous disability, then you don't get a recovery from the second injury fund. But if it was, then you do. It actually makes all the sections have some meaning.
Well, to respond to that, Your Honor, I think that then you have to get back to legislative intent. And it's undisputed in this case that the General Assembly amended the workers' compensation law during a period when the fund was insolvent. As outlined in Decker and Skirvin, the fund had reached a point where it was unable to pay individuals who had received.
And that's why they said no claims after that date that occurred after that date can be compensated. But that doesn't necessarily mean they meant people who had permanent, partial, or total disability before that date couldn't be compensated.
Well, you still have to have some cutoff date. And what the legislature has decided, they created a bright line of January 1, 2014. And from a second injury fund perspective, regardless of when your injury, a primary work-related injury occurred, you still have to assess the pre-existing disabilities. And that would be the reason why the language is in subsection 2, so that it gives a guide of if somebody has previous disability before 1/1/14, as well as a primary work-related injury, then subsection 2, which essentially restates what the law was previously, applies, and then moving forward after the enactment date, subsection 3 would apply.
How would you address Gattendy? I know you would try to distinguish it just by that being a partial permanent disability matter, but
total permanent.
Yes, I'm sorry. But the language in Gattendy says that all of subsection 3 includes pre-existing and primary injuries occurring after January 1st. Well, so if we follow Gattendy, I mean everything underneath
GATME would have to include pre-existing and primary injuries.
To respond to your question, Judge Powell, I think that this case is clearly distinguishable from GATME. What GATME tells us is that the court created a distinction between injuries caused by accident and those caused by occupational disease. The only way that the court was able to reach that determination was by looking at both subsection 2 and subsection 3. When you look at those subsections together, the GATME court had determined that for injuries caused by accident, you have to have both the pre-existing and primary occur after January 1, 2014 for the new law to apply. But when referring to occupational diseases, the date of disability is irrelevant. You're looking at the filing date. And I believe an example would highlight the absurdity of saying that subsection 3 would apply only when both the primary and pre-existing occur after January 1, 2014. So for permanent partial disability, if you have an injured worker who works in a factory, has an accident that injures their rotator cuff, that's clear this is an accident, they lift something heavy, have a rotator cuff tear, that person would be eligible for permanent partial disability benefits based on GATME, but that same individual, if they had a rotator cuff tear that was by repetitive use, would be ineligible. And then to take that even further, that same individual, if they had another work-related injury a year later that was an accident, so referring to the occupational disease, then they would be able to recover permanent partial disability for that claim, and then they would be able to use their pre-existing occupational disease that would have been ineligible for benefits as a pre-existing disability to recover second injury fund benefits. And so I think that, I mean, to distinguish this case from GATME 1, as you mentioned, this case involves permanent partial disability, and GATME involved permanent total disability. But further, when you look at the language that is used for permanent total disability compared to what is used for permanent partial disability, the language for permanent partial disability is very clear. The language in subsection 3 says, quote, no claims for permanent partial disability occurring after January 1, 2014 shall be filed against the second injury fund. And I think another absurdity with the analysis in GATME is that if that were true, then an example that is highlighted in my brief, somebody who is a child born on December 31st, 2013 with a congenital birth defect would be eligible for permanent partial disability for the remainder of his or her life, even if that person doesn't have a work-related injury until he or she is 60 years old. And unlike permanent total disability, where once you're awarded benefits, you receive that benefit weekly for the remainder of your life, that person would be able to receive permanent partial disability benefits. It would be unlimited. So depending on how many work-related injuries that person had, they would be able to continue to recover for permanent partial disability. And when looking at the insolvency of the second injury fund, the legislature decided to eliminate permanent partial disability after January 1, 2014, because even though the permanent partial disabilities are smaller in number, where the value of a total disability, for instance, is going to be much larger from a dollar standpoint, the permanent partial disability claims are large in number. So when you magnify those and add those up together, the outstanding balance and the potential of liability is going to be much greater.
Counsel, you only have 45 seconds left for your constitutional arguments. I thought you might
Yes, just to touch on that briefly, it's the respondent's position that the Subsection 3 does not violate the Missouri or United States Constitution. Addressing each of those in turn, starting with the open courts provision, this court outlined a three-part test for open courts provision challenges to recover. The party would have to show that they have a recognized cause of action being restricted, and that restriction is arbitrary or unreasonable. In this case, appellant cannot overcome part one of that test because under subsection 3, there's no cause of action. Moving on to the equal protection challenge, the appellant concedes that no suspect class or fundamental rights involved. Rational basis applies. I would assert that there is a rational basis for the statute.
Thank you.
I think I only have 30 seconds. I don't know.
No, you have 3 minutes.
But I'll talk super fast.
First, you have 3 minutes. You don't have to use them all. You have your full time.
Thank you. Thank you, Chief Justice.
First of all, the child with a congenital birth defect, that is the very person the Second Injury Fund was created in 1943 to protect. No doubt about it, because up until allegedly this change, that person had benefits. So that's to say that the fund was absurd previously. The legislative intent is undisputed. For nearly three quarters of a century, the legislature did not abrogate that case law. And it specifically interprets, and the cases are specific, as on point as I could find, on subsection 2, which used to be subsection 1, and then it got renumbered a million times. But the legislative intent, was to discourage employers from discriminating people with previous disabilities, period, and the potential that employers would discriminate against them. The intent wasn't for self-preservation. Since when does anyone decide to do the right thing based off of the price tag of what's right?
Well, the circumstances were that the Second Injury Fund was insolvent at the time the court, the legislature adopted the statutory amendment.
Judge Breckenridge, in response, there is no legislative intent that says it. They cite Deckard, doesn't say it. Deckard's about retroactivity of the payment schedule, not about subsection 2 and 3 at all.
I thought in your rational basis argument you agreed that the Second Injury Fund was insolvent.
My understanding is they're no longer insolvent. They are solvent currently. And permanent partial disabilities didn't make the fund insolvent in the first place. I could understand maybe that argument if these minor in comparison to permanent total disability, people who get hurt and can't go back to work, the value, as you know, because you decided the Witte case, those cases in front of you were only worth $4,000 to $10,000. And there were four cases in front of you in the Witte case. Only two of the four you found compensable. That's 50%. If 50% of the Missourians who have previous disabilities, who have congenital birth defects, get benefits, that's not going to make the fund go broke. And furthermore, for three quarters of a century, the fund is paid for, not by state of Missouri's funds. The funds for the fund, how they have money, is a surcharge on the employer's premiums for insurance. So awarding benefits will have no effect on, I see my time's up.
Please, you can go ahead and finish your answer.
Thank you, Chief Justice. Awarding benefits here, or if you find it unconstitutional, will have zero effect on the budget of the state of Missouri. And furthermore, if my last point, I'm sorry, there's two people who are going to be harmed. It's everyone in the state of Missouri, all the employees, and employers are going to be very upset because employers aren't getting the value of their surcharge because the fund was supposed to pay for the combination. So they're upset because they're going to get hit threefold. They're going to pay for the new subsequent compensable injury. They're going to pay here I'm an employee's attorney arguing for the employer. Hold on. Sorry, Dad. employers are going to hit threefold.
Got another son, remember.
We've got two more, if I get disowned. And they're here today. They're going to get hit with the surcharge. The employers are going to get hit with the subsequent compensable injury. And by the way, you're going to get hit with the combinational effect. And if I'm an employer, I'm not discriminatory, but if an employer is going to hire somebody knowing that, they have more incentive to discriminate than ever before.
Thank you. It was a well-argued case by both sides. Thank you.
Thank you.